Conscious Curiosity SD, where successful San Diego leaders share their stories of leading beyond profit and are using the influence of business to positively change the companies and communities we all work and live in. I'm your host, Jeff Blanton from Jailbreak Leadership, a proven and powerful process for unlocking the full potential of the people and teams across your organization, giving you the competitive advantage in the marketplace. We want to thank our collaborative community of business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Business for Good, Cause San Diego, and Be Local. We're all focused on impacting our community of San Diego through the work they do as business leaders. Welcome to the show.
Some people have figured out through their own personal journey of trials and tribulations the formula for success. Then there are a few that take that success and use their knowledge and wisdom to help others. Today in the studio, we have such a leader. Felina Hansen, welcome to Conscious Curiosity SD.
Happy to be here, Jeff.
Felina is the founder of HeraHub, a female-focused co-working space and business accelerator. Over the years, I've been in your facility multiple times. I always thought it was kind of a cool story, and I thought, man, it'd be cool to have you on the show. Of course, I didn't do anything about that, but I thought it'd be cool. Then you and I were in the same room here recently. We were at the Business for Good Summit. Yeah. You were on a panel, and I boldly walked up nervously and said, Felina, will you be on my podcast?
Of course.
And she said yes. So here she is. I love that. Are you ready to rock and roll here?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, let's start out with the big why. What's the thing behind the thing? What's the big injustice you're trying to fix in the world? Why do you do what you do?
Yeah, I don't know if it's an injustice per se, but I've always been passionate about business. I grew up in a family of small business owners, entrepreneurs, folks that didn't follow the conventional path that others did.
Unlike my dad, who worked at GM his whole career.
Yeah, exactly. So both my parents, my mom's an entrepreneur, my dad founded and still runs, and my little brother is taking over a retail floor covering business in San Luis Obispo County. So small businesses. So grew up in business, knew I wanted to go into business, and it was partially three layoffs working in media and technology in my 20s that gave me the opportunity to start my own business in marketing. And it was through that experience of running my own business and feeling alone and isolated a lot of the times when you go from working with a team to working for yourself, by yourself, in your spare bedroom, that opportunity to connect with people and get perspective and new ideas is not there anymore. So I had this company, Perspective Marketing, for 8 years. And was also stepping into some leadership positions, just, you know, partially from passion and partially to build my network and build my business. Was doing marketing strategy primarily for what I call relationship-driven companies. So anything that is more of a referral-based type of business, think attorney, somebody in finance, that type of thing, as opposed to traditional advertising type.
Right.
So it was my business. It was getting involved in some of these organizations and just happened to be female focused groups and seeing the differences. I mean, there are differences between men and women. I don't know
really?
That everybody wants to admit that for some reason, but
you've noticed this?
We're different creatures. We make decisions differently. We operate differently in not all cases, but needing to really like build my business, but also give other women the support and confidence. It's a big word for me. I got very, very lucky. I had two parents that really poured into me and built just an incredible amount of confidence in me. And I didn't see that in a lot of the women that I met. And so I wanted to build a platform that brought together both my background in marketing and also that opportunity to bring people together to support each other and build confidence in each other. And through those relationships, build a business and a prosperous life. So wasn't an injustice per se. I do get that question. Something happened to you. You know, why are you focused on helping women?
Well, there's kind of this belief that purpose is driven a little bit by a wrong in the world that needs to be fixed.
Yeah.
Solving a problem. Maybe injustice is a strong word, but solving a problem.
Solving a problem. Absolutely.
Something you saw as a problem.
Yeah, exactly. And so this was early in the co-working days. This is 2010. I was teaching part-time adjunct just for fun on the side. I was teaching at the Fashion Institute of Design and Merchandising, and long story of why I taught there, but
Were you teaching marketing or is it?
I was teaching marketing and entrepreneurship. And again, just for fun on the side, I don't have children myself. And, you know, it was a way to give back and connect with the community. And I helped throw an eco fashion show with my students and needed a space. And my neighbor at the time, Majuba Levine, who is a well-known stylist here in San Diego, knew the two co-founders of a brand new co-working space here in San Diego. This is March 2010, same year WeWork started. And I thought, great, I'd love to go look at the space. Thanks for making the intro. And it was a really cool space, much like where we are now at the BBB, you know, open collaborative space. But again, this was really early on. Most people hadn't even heard of the word co-working before.
The need wasn't as great back then, I guess.
Well, right? I was just unaware, right? I mean, executive office suites have been around forever.
That's true.
Right? Regis and that type of thing. But the difference with co-working is community first and space second.
Yeah, the earlier model is like, there's your office. Instead of having corporate job, now you have an office here, right?
Yeah, people don't talk to each other. They don't really interact. It's just a quiet space. And co-working, again, the premise is community first. So we hosted this event. I checked out the space for my own business. And I thought, this is so cool. What a great idea. The phrase folks use in co-working is working alone together. And I'm like, I need this. You know, this would be great. I lived in North Park. I still live in North Park. I was downtown. I thought, this is really cool. So I checked it out for my own business. And what I found was it wasn't my tribe, frankly. I mean, great people, but skewed quite young, kind of that techie bro, hooded sweatshirt, headphone, ping pong table culture. Yeah, wasn't me. But it did prompt an idea. And so I started doing research. I went to New York, LA, San Francisco, and I looked at the handful of co-working spaces that already existed. And I thought, I can do this in San Diego. But I wanted to have a focus on women. We've always been female focused, but gender inclusive. So it's not about blocking a certain sex or type of person.
I've been in your building a few times.
Yeah.
Let me in. You
Absolutely.
Were friendly.
It wasn't
too scary.
No, exactly. It's just about creating an environment that is specific to a certain demographic, a certain segment.
There's a certain warmth.
Yeah, warm and welcoming. We call it spa-inspired co-working space. So, you know, the music, the fountains, the aromatherapy candles, that type of thing, but not overtly feminine, of course. So, and as a marketer, I know you need a niche, right? And so that was the niche that I chose. So it took quite some time to get our first location. It wasn't as easy as I thought to go lease commercial real estate. Got beat up a few times.
And a little easier today to get that commercial real estate.
Not really.
Really?
No,
even with all the issues going on?
Yeah. You know, it is so interesting, Jeff. You would think that. And you would think after my third and fourth and, you know, seventh location that it would get easier. And it has a little bit from the standpoint of, hey, we have a track record. This isn't just a startup, somebody with a business plan. Like, you know, there's actual numbers behind this. But folks in the commercial real estate industry are gun shy to put any what's referred as TIs, tenant improvements, into a space, right? If they're going to put some money in to restructure the space, even just paint and carpet, they want to know you're going to be successful. And so, you know, with what happened with COVID and, you know, folks working from home, it certainly did put a dent in commercial real estate. And I don't think it's going to recover the way that folks hope. Obviously, we're turning some commercial office buildings into housing. I mean, there's needs there. So I think co-working is well poised now that we're out of COVID, if you can say that, right?
Yeah.
To support that third place environment, right? You don't always want to work at home. You don't always want to work in the office. Sometimes you want to get out into a different environment and interact with other people that aren't within your own industry or aren't within your own company and get new, fresh ideas and perspectives.
And thus, Hera Hub was found.
Yes, exactly. Right. Very long story.
That's all right. So maybe tell us a little bit about Hera Hub.
Yeah. So it's a shared workspace and business accelerator. So we do, you know, just shared workspace, very basic, shared meeting rooms, open workspace, office space, that type of thing. But the majority of our space is open and shared. We don't do a lot of private offices. That would be more like a traditional business center or executive suite. So most of our members are coming in, you know, a day or maybe 2 days a week. We have a lot of virtual members as well, folks that live across the country. because we do, and pre-COVID, this changed, was most of our events were in person, but through 2020, we obviously moved everything online, and our members really liked that. Again, we have members across the country. We have 7 locations now. And so folks can show up 5 to 10 hours a week on Zoom, connect with other people, get new ideas, learn something, get mentoring, lots of opportunities to connect. And we do that in a very active environment. A lot of
So that's a very unique thing. Everybody's just thinking, okay, I get a membership, I show up, maybe run some programs, I attend, don't attend, whatever, but there's a whole other model here. That's
exactly,
taking place.
Exactly. So we call it just-in-time acceleration. If you need some support, there's always somebody there to support you and get you to that next step in your business or your career. Most of our members are entrepreneurs, but not all of them. We've got some folks that work remotely for some other companies, but they enjoy the environment and the connection with other smart people as well. And then we have 2 formal business accelerators. One is called the Launch Academy, just as it sounds, launching your business. And that was part of the book that I wrote about 7 years ago called Flight Club, as in taking flight as an entrepreneur.
Brad Pitt and gang.
Yes, exactly. It was inspired. The title was inspired
Female
by that movie.
Female focused here. But
it was definitely inspired by that movie. And I do talk about that in the book because it was around that time that that movie came out. And it really made me think about, if you remember the character Ed Norton in that movie, and he's working in this gray cubicle, and he's a copy of a copy of a copy. And that idea of just being a cog in the wheel, right? And just being in this very dull, boring environment did inform why and how I built HeraHub the way I did. So
this is after hours. We all get together.
Yes, exactly. Yes. What happens at HeraHub stays at HeraHub.
No, exactly. There you go.
So we arm wrestle. No, I'm just kidding. So as part of that book, it was a bit of telling my story of other entrepreneurs and their journey and how they did it. But the back third of the book is this 17-step startup map that I built. Partially because, again, I taught college for 8 years. I taught entrepreneurship. I developed curriculum for 2 different colleges. And there are a billion how to write a business plan books and websites and, you know, platforms out there. But I never found something that was really very simple and sequential. And there is a sequence to building a business. Do this first before you do that. Because I see a lot of entrepreneurs have gotten in trouble by not kind of checking all the boxes.
Right. Step 6. Right.
Yeah. Especially, you know, what most folks feel like is the boring stuff, you know, the legal stuff, the bookkeeping stuff, right? They just want to come up with an idea, market it, sell it, and, you know, make money, right? But there's a lot that goes into, as you know, building a business. So the Launch Academy is outlined just lightly in the book, but then I built an online platform to point people to. And then during COVID, I built what now is called the Growth Academy for companies that are, you know, again, small
Next
businesses.
Level.
Yeah. Could be hiring your first employee. It could be getting, you know, a small business loan for your business. So we really support much smaller businesses than, you know, a lot of the tech accelerators. There are so many great tech accelerators, you know, Techstars and Y Combinator and Founders Institute. We are not competing with those folks. We are helping the folks that are not going to fit into those models and giving them an opportunity to accelerate their business. These are 9-week programs sponsored by different organizations. That's part of our public benefit corporation status.
We'll get into that.
Yeah. Yeah. So we find different banks, microcredit institutions, even the SBDC, Women's Business Center, that will sponsor a cohort to go through anywhere between 10 and 20 individuals through this 9-week accelerator, either at the launch stage or the growth stage.
Now, is these programs kind of an add-on to being a member, or is it like I'm a member so I get to participate? I mean, what's the
members,
model look like?
No matter what level, and we have 4 different membership levels just to give people a little more flexibility. A lot of our members aren't there all day, every day. They want to work from home sometimes. They're traveling, you know, that kind of thing. So any member can have access to all of our programming regardless of the membership level that they're on.
You just have to sign up and show up.
Yep, exactly.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That is a big difference because, I mean, most of the time I think people think workshops almost like what you said. You show up, maybe it's a hub of your kinds of folks or whatever, but you're there to work and do your thing. But you're here going, no, we got a whole program two different levels of program, depending on where you're at, to help you move things forward.
Exactly.
Which obviously probably creates the community as well, because you're coming together, other like-minded people working through issues together, that kind of thing.
Exactly.
That's amazing. And then you were saying a lot of people are virtual, so people are joining really from the perspective, I just want to be part of the programs, not necessarily using
the
space.
That's exactly right. Yeah, absolutely.
Now you are national.
Yeah.
So I think you're like one of the first franchisees that I've ever had on the show. So maybe speak to that a little bit. What's that look like? How does one make that move?
Absolutely, yeah. So
that's going to be the third program, right?
There you go.
How do we franchise?
Well, slight distinction. We went with a licensing model, which is a little bit different than franchising. It's a little simpler. It also allows more customization at the local level.
Okay.
So I licensed the business model, our first location, which will celebrate 10 years this upcoming May, is in Washington, D.C. So,
oh, wow. I didn't realize you've had this model that long. I thought this was more recent.
No, 13 years.
Wow.
We've been in business 13 years and supported over 14,000 individuals in the launch or growth of their business. So pretty proud of those numbers. My goal initially was to support over 20,000. So
that number's kind of small now.
We're well on the way. Exactly. So I knew I couldn't do that with just one location, right? And just me. And so I decided to build a business model that I could scale and teach other people how to do. So we opened in Washington, D.C. almost 10 years ago. And I will say, Jeff, that was my proudest business moment of my entire career.
Really?
Why so? Is launching a location in Washington, D.C. The doors opened and I was not there.
Ah, that says something. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. So really building a model that could be replicated. And a lot of that is documentation and training. And I'm a marketing girl, remember? SOPs, exactly. So I really had to learn that side of the business. And really neat story, San Diego story. So a young woman that was an intern of mine just about a year into the business from San Diego State, not too far from here, I met her through TEDx San Diego. She had gone to a TEDx San Diego event and met one of my members there who's a graphic facilitator, does graphic recording. So she basically takes an event and, you know, through pen and paper, creates that entire event on this huge, almost like mural, basically. Really cool thing. Her name is Janelle King. So she met this young woman who ironically also is named Janelle. And Janelle asked, hey, do you know anybody who's looking for an intern? And so I was referred and Janelle Dahl became my intern. And basically right out of college, I hired her. She was my first employee. And
I know
she,
Janelle.
Yeah. Yeah, she wrote.
She actually worked with me for a little
Perfect.
While.
Perfect. Yeah, yes.
She was my COO for a period of time.
She's amazing. She's amazing. Yeah. So she got started with Hera Hub during her internship. Her project was to write our first operations plan, which we have, of course, you know, evolve every single day. And yeah, she was with us full time for about 4 years and then came to me and said, I want to start my own business. And
oh,
I said,
wow.
Fantastic. Let's do it. Right. Because that's what we do. We breed entrepreneurs. And so I've been a client of hers ever since. So yeah, this was back in, I think, 2012. So
great
quite
story.
Some time.
Yeah, wow. Small world too.
Yeah.
Up in San Diego.
Exactly.
So I have to assume identifying the right person to actually be in partnership with has got to be one of the biggest challenges.
It is.
I mean, how do you really find that like-minded?
Yep.
They get what you're trying to do, but at the same time, they're going to have some different thoughts. So
yeah, it is.
What's that look like?
Yeah.
How do you make that happen?
We have a market assessment process that we take folks through. So we really do get to know them. I'll be honest, co-working, yes, it is profitable. My locations are profitable, but it's not highly profitable. So somebody needs to do this because their heart's in the right place, to be honest, and they're in the right space in their career where they really want to give back to the community. So, yeah, finding that person is a bit of a needle in the haystack for sure. We got lucky pretty early on in the business through a nonprofit called The Story Exchange. They came out and filmed some video and did a story on Hera Hub and me. And that got picked up by the New York Times. They got a media partnership shortly thereafter with the New York Times. And so that publicity really catapulted us and got us a lot of exposure. And that's ultimately how I got my first licensee in Washington, D.C., because she happened to see
the article
syndication of that in a platform called Smart Brief and so reached out. So I'm a big fan of always say yes to any opportunity.
So here you are in the Conscious Curiosity podcast. Who knows what might happen?
Who knows? Well, honestly, it was a couple years after that I was on a podcast. This woman, Lisa Peterson, The Art of Mindful Wealth, she was based, maybe still is, in Sedona, Arizona, said yes to her podcast. And I had a woman in Sweden who heard that podcast 6 months later, reached out, ended up opening a location in Sweden. I went to Sweden twice. I happened to be part Swedish. And unfortunately, that location didn't make it through COVID. She had three small children at home she was distance learning with, and you can't run a co-working space and distance learn at the same time. But pretty cool that, again, through a podcast, through this, you know, just piece of information floating out there, that somebody heard it and reached out. So,
well, you're now part of the Conscious Curiosity SD family here, our community. As you know, I'm trying to put together a little sub crew of the ladies on the podcast to see what we could collaborate and do together. So
absolutely.
Who knows what's going to happen out of that, right?
Yeah.
I have high expectations.
Absolutely. Yeah. We have so many amazing organizations in San Diego, Business for Good. I was just at the Cause Conference a couple weeks ago as well, talking about public benefit corporations. Part of it is just there's so much bandwidth that I have to be involved in how many groups.
Exactly. So I hear that. So let's talk about the public benefit corporation. So B Local, which is the kind of social arm of B Corps, we're here locally, are part of this podcast.
Yeah.
We don't get too many people coming here talking about being in the public benefit corporation. So that's who you
are. It's a unique.
So maybe explain a little bit to the audience what that is, and then we maybe talk about the differences.
Yeah, absolutely. So a public benefit corporation is basically you edit your articles of incorporation when you found your company. We didn't come out of the gate as a public benefit corporation because I didn't know, it didn't even exist back in 2011.
Relatively new.
Yeah. So, and only 37 states honor that designation, if you will. So you put that in your articles of incorporation, in our case, edited that. And that's easier to do when you're the sole owner of the company. If you have partners, you know, everybody has to decide, but it's easy for me because I'm the sole owner of the business. So we stated four different areas that we were already giving back to the community, and we put those in our articles of incorporation, and we're required every year to do an annual report on how we hit those goals for the public benefit corporation.
Who does that actually go to? I mean,
doesn't go to anybody. It's on. Yeah, great question. It is on your website. It's required to be. So it's on the footer of every single page of our website. And it just has to be publicly available.
Okay.
And there are certain questions you have to answer, and that goes in that report. So it's a web page. It's pretty simple. And it states, you know, what those four goals are, how we hit those metrics. And there are some other questions that we list on there, too. So who, you know, how much of the business do you own? Any investors? Things of that nature. So our four pillars are, number one, as I just mentioned, the Launch and Growth Academies. We go out and seek sponsors for those so folks can go through for free or very low cost. And anywhere between $100,000 and $200,000 a year is sponsored for folks to go through those programs. So it's a real number. Our guru program are subject matter experts that donate their time to the community. So we have gurus in every location. Folks can meet with an attorney, a CPA, a marketer. We've got all kinds of experts, and they donate their time to the community. That's open to the public. So anyone can engage with them, not just members. Our ambassador program is our work trade program, folks that are perhaps in work transition, maybe, you know, students just graduating, trying to get into the job market. And also we have a lot of women who maybe have stepped out of the workforce for a number of years to raise kids. And they're just at that point where like, how do I even get back into the job market? How do I get experience on my resume? That kind of thing. So they're members in a trade type situation. And then last but not least, we donate space to nonprofit organizations that align with our giving mission.
I think so that's partly how I've been
exactly.
You know, facilitating meetings for a nonprofit or something.
Exactly. So we work with quite a few organizations, and we donate space for them to have events or workshops or board meetings, et cetera.
So one of the things, and maybe correct me if I'm wrong here, but part of the whole value of this, I was always interested in this idea of hostile takeovers, right? You got a publicly traded company. Someone comes in and says, we're going to give you X amount of dollars for this thing, which would be great for the shareholders, but not necessarily good for the long term of the company, right? We're going to blow it up, whatever. Yep. We're known for doing that.
Yep.
And legally, the board has to say, okay, if this is financially good for the shareholders, we really need to do this.
Yes.
Versus as a public benefit corporation, you say, well, no, we have a larger
mission.
Mission here of stakeholders. So we take into account, what are you going to do with the company afterwards?
Yeah.
And actually say no.
Exactly.
Versus being sued and all the other things that happen in the other model. So
exactly.
I think that's very, really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. And so needed, right? I mean, we have this, we've got nonprofits on one side and, you know, big corporations, as a lot of people think about, you know, C corps, right? And there's not a lot in between. And so that's where labels like benefit corporations, you know, B Corps, right, come into play, is there's a middle ground, right? You can make a profit and support the planet and people, right? And so a lot of the organizations I know you're involved in are very much promoting
movement.
That. Yeah,
right, that's
exactly.
How can we
can do both.
We can do both. We actually, and it can be a win-win.
Yes.
Because those things, those good things you're doing actually drive business. It's a proven model. I don't know why we struggle with this so much, but you know, like employees want to be engaged, work somewhere there's meaning. Yeah. They don't want to be blowing up the planet. So when you actually follow these things, it's a really good business practice.
But. Exactly. And critical to attract the next generation of talent.
Oh, yeah.
They're critical.
I just had an opportunity to facilitate an event for Autodesk. Mm-hmm. They have their big annual thing here. Yeah. And they had an executive summit. And I facilitated an hour meeting around this survey they did.
Yeah.
And is things that the issues that they've identified. Mm. And so the fourth one was sustainability. So when I'm facilitating with my group, it wasn't so much they were all about sustainability. It was like sustainability was so that their employees would actually stay with them. I mean, like they're going, our younger generation, if we're not being sustainable, if our vendors aren't being sustainable, they'll leave like in a nanosecond. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, for whatever reason they do it, it's the right thing to do.
Also says there's hope for the future here, right? The next generations are going to definitely demand this and make some things happen here.
Yes.
So
amazing.
So you're not a B Corp, correct?
Correct. Yeah.
So talk about that a little bit. Why did you not go down that path?
Yeah, B Corp is a certification. It's highly confusing because the names are very similar, right? So I often get, you know, people saying.
Assumption is.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, you're B Corp. Well, not quite. So I did a lot of research before I made this decision. And at the time when I looked at the B Corp certification and the questions that came with that assessment, there were a lot of parameters that I didn't control in the business. I didn't own the building. I didn't manage the janitorial staff. That was provided by the building ownership, you know. And so some of the things around sustainability that I would want to do in the business, I didn't have control over. And so I decided to look at the other model, which is public benefit corporation. And what I liked about the public benefit corporation is that annual report piece. Every year you put out this annual report stating how you met those goals and objectives in your business. I know with B Corps, you recertify every 3 years, but what I found in going to the B Corp website is it was a bit outdated. The list of companies was quite outdated. It just didn't feel like they were up on, you know, B Labs, the organization that manages this entity or whatever your certification, I guess you call it, just didn't feel quite up to date, frankly. And so that, and then the fact that there were just variables I didn't control in my business, is why we went with the public benefit corporation. I have heard that the questions, the assessment has changed over the years. And so, you know, at some point when I have a moment to breathe,
I'll take on another big project. Let's go become a B Corp.
Yes, exactly. I'll go back and look at that because perhaps they've changed some of those parameters and questions where, you know, it would be easier for me to qualify to be a B Corp. So, but for now, public benefit corporation seems to suit us. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you're doing all those things, right?
Exactly.
I mean, that's the key.
It's a different label, but.
It's really about the mindset, I think, here. It's like the philosophy of the leader versus did we check some box somewhere? Because I think that's where we get trouble often, is often things become check the box. And in reality, nothing's actually changed or different. And
With like, you know, the whole hubbub around like carbon offsets and, you know, things of that nature and the greenwashing and whatnot.
Pull back the rail. These guys are just buying their way out of the deal here.
Exactly.
So that's not helping anybody.
Yeah.
So let's talk about this idea of women versus men and the confidence and all that. Maybe talk a little bit about that. It's part of what you're teaching and trying, what you're trying to bring to the party here. So maybe give a little insights on that.
Yeah. You know,
give me some confidence.
I wish I knew more of the science. I've read, you know, a fair bit. There's a book called The Confidence Code. It was written by two female journalists maybe 8-10 years ago. So it's not a new book. But that was one of the areas that really helped me understand some of the reasons why. And again, this is a gross generalization, right? There are plenty of men that aren't as confident, and there are plenty of women that are very confident. But what I have seen over the last 13 years and running Hera Hub and even prior to that is, for a number of reasons, women in business, specifically decision-making and risk-taking, tend to be less confident, frankly. And it's only in environments where they feel safe to say that that they will say that, right? Hera Hub, name of the business, Hera is the Greek goddess of women. And she was said to watch and protect and guard women through every stage of their life. And her symbol, interestingly enough, was the male peacock feather. And I grew up with peacocks, and that was my first, entrepreneurial venture. I was selling peacock feathers down in my little hometown in Arroyo Grande. But sometimes we'll joke around like peacocking, right? Like the term of like, get your tail feathers out, ladies, like act bigger than you are, right? Like throw up your tail feathers like a male peacock. And so just creating those environments where women can express and say, I'm scared. I don't know what I'm doing. I just put my entire family livelihood on the line to start this business, and I need help. And it's not always easy to say that in certain environments, frankly, sure, yeah. In kind of that tech bro environment, if you will, right? Everybody wants to seem like they know what they're doing. So oftentimes it's called imposter syndrome. And when entrepreneurs, especially when they're new, but even years into their business, when you work at home by yourself for yourself, it is easy to have imposter syndrome. I had it even when I was running my marketing agency. It's like, am I doing this? Is this like really a thing? Because, I don't have an office. Does that mean I'm not actually doing this, right? And so giving women an opportunity to show up in a space, to have a professional place to meet with clients, but also to see other women around them. There's always the phrase, if you can't see it, you can't be it. To see other women doing amazing things and be able to sit down with them and say, how did you do it? What's your advice for me? In a very safe, supportive environment, I think is really important.
I think men have that same problem. And I think women have an advantage that you may be more willing to admit to it than
men. There you
men.
Go.
Men
there
are
you
really,
go.
Yeah. Maybe that's our confidence. I wouldn't call that confidence. I just we're kind of idiots, right? That we're not willing to be open and say that.
Yeah.
I facilitated a women's mastermind group for a couple of years, and I was just amazed at how quickly everyone gelled and how open everybody was with men.
Yeah.
I facilitated a men's group as well. It's like,
there's a little more guarded there.
Oh,
yeah.
For sure. Yeah. And I mean, I think it's partly how we're brought up. It's America. Yeah. It's like, it's got to be a winner.
Yep.
Can't ever, when we go, it's election day, you got to be a winner.
Yeah,
right?
yeah. Let's not get into that.
Yeah. It is election day. Today's November 5th. Here we are so far.
The world has not exploded.
I don't see any smoke on the horizon or anything.
Exactly.
So it's a good thing.
Yeah.
So that point, what are you optimistic about? You're out, you got businesses around the country, you're seeing lots of things. So what gives you optimism?
I'm optimistic about entrepreneurship, frankly. I'm optimistic that the next generation is excited about entrepreneurship. They want to be their own boss. Sometimes, they want to be an influencer, and there's a whole nother.
That's what I read, something like 70% want to be an influencer.
Want to be an influencer, okay. Which,
so do I.
It can work for some, but it's kind of like professional sports. Not everyone's going to make the big bucks.
It's a pyramid.
But there's so much opportunity out there. There truly is. And there's so much creativity. And, platforms, even though I don't love it, to be honest, for certain reasons, TikTok is giving a lot of people opportunities to be discovered and to make money, which is exciting. So I love that the next generation is thinking differently, not only about their impact on the world and the environment, but also just creativity around what tools are out there and how we can make money. It isn't the world, like you said, with your father working for GM for 40 or whatever years, right? It really is a different world. And so that's what makes America great, frankly. I'll say that on election day, is our opportunity to be innovative. And a big portion of it is the funding platforms that are here in the U.S. There is opportunity to raise money. A lot of people, the culture will, especially the Silicon Valley culture, if you will say, will take a risk on a young, idea or young entrepreneur. And that really has allowed us as a country. I mean, you look at it globally, right? Where does 90% of the innovation come from? It's here in the U.S. And partially because of the culture we've created, but also the funding abilities that we have here in the U.S.
So how's AI fitting into your world?
Yeah.
Speaking of technology and changes coming.
It's exciting. I mean, it really is exciting. It will disrupt. It already has been disrupting a lot of industries, lots of folks losing their job, which is unfortunate. I think it is the obligation of public agencies, the government, whatever you want to call it, to build really proper retraining opportunities for these people that have lost their job. I think there is a big role education should play. I'm also anti, if you will, traditional college for a lot of folks. Mm-hmm. You know, the idea of four-year school, get in a bunch of debt, you know, go work for the man kind of thing, you know, to get yourself out of debt, right? I myself went to community college. I didn't go straight to four-year. I did end up transferring. That's how I came here to San Diego. I went to USD, but it was only because I went to community college for 2 years that was effectively free that I was able to go to a decent four-year school after that. And so there are lots of different paths, that traditional path of graduate high school, go to college, 4 years, you know, type of thing, is going away, I think. And I think that's a good thing. But we still
need... And where are they teaching us in school these days? Giving that at my on my hand, I got everything I need to know, plus AI. So what are you doing for me? How are you going to evolve me as a human being, I think, is maybe where we got to focus.
Absolutely. You can learn anything you want, anywhere, at any time. Yep. Absolutely. 100%. And so, you know, those traditional structures, if you can't tell, I'm pretty anti-structure as being an entrepreneur.
You're running programs over here, though.
Well, no, but it's a different structure, right? Like I'm giving someone almost an MBA in 9 weeks, right? I mean, and
here's what you need to do or know.
The practical, like super uber practical. And that's the, again, I taught college for 10 years. I mean, I've been on the other side of it. It's frustrating, to be honest. And I understand there's accreditation, you know, organizations that these schools have to abide by. And, you know, there's some good things that come out of that as well. But the bottom line is we don't need it the way we did before. And there's so many other opportunities to learn. So I'm excited about AI. I use it in my business daily. I'm learning daily, you know, how to better use it. We teach a lot. I have members that are involved in AI and they'll step up and teach, you know, about how to use this in our businesses, which is great. But I do think we need to think bigger as a society of how we take those people that have lost their jobs because of AI and help them find the new jobs of, you know, the next 10, 20, 30 years.
Right. I mean, if you think about where we are today and kind of this big divide we got in the country, that was kind of based on the slow roll of globalization, right? Where all these great jobs in the U.S. went elsewhere because it was cheaper to produce it, you know, in China or Vietnam or somewhere else. And all of a sudden, a bunch of people got left behind.
Yep.
So here we are. This is going to be happening way, way faster.
Yes.
Very, very way faster. So
absolutely.
That's a bad English right there. But anyways.
I gotcha.
Yeah. So we better have some sort of plan on what we're going to do or, man, we're going to have even a greater disruption going on here in the country.
Yes.
So I understand you're a traveler.
Yes.
So where's the best place you've been and what's next?
Yeah, that's always a tough question, right? If I asked you, Jeff, what's the best place you've been, what would you say?
San Diego, of course.
Okay, all right, fair enough. Okay. Yes, I love to travel. I think I'm 27, 28 countries and have another 40 to 50 on my bucket list. So
what's the next one on the horizon? You got a plan?
I've got a list deciding which to check off first. Eastern Europe is high on my list. We just hosted a young woman in her early 30s, a startup company out of Eastern Europe through the San Diego Diplomacy Council in the U.S. State Department. So we host fellows from all over the world. We had a young woman from South Thailand as well at the same time. We had a woman from Brunei a few months ago. So really neat to be able to, through the San Diego Diplomacy Council, welcome entrepreneurs from around the world to Hera Hub and to San Diego and show them how amazing our community is. So Montenegro, Eastern Europe is high on the list. I do an annual strategic planning retreat for a small group of our members, and we go all kinds of cool places. Oh. So next year, 2025.
That's kind of fun. Actually, well, we got a business thing that promotes me to go to do things I love to do.
My business pays for me to travel, exactly. Yeah. So next fall, September 2025, we're going to go to Lagos, Portugal. So the Algarve coast, which is the southern coast of Portugal, is just stunning. And so I'm going to take a small group to Lagos, Portugal.
Nice. Nice. Well, we got to put a bow on this, Felina. I always like to end up with asking the question, what's the big idea? So yeah. If people just remembered one thing that you want them to remember, what would that be?
Yeah. So my goal with Hera Hub is not only to connect women city to city, but also country to country. So create opportunities for women around the world to connect with each other and use that as an opportunity to build or grow their business. So that's what I continue to do is global domination is the goal, whatever that looks like.
There we
not
go.
Not in
that.
The way of, you know, like a WeWork opening thousands of locations per se, but
a movement know, that's
using,
happening.
Exactly. Nice. Using our platform. And I believe I have a relatively unique way of teaching entrepreneurship and business. And so using that platform to connect with and give women an opportunity to connect with each other and teach each other.
Oh, I love that. I appreciate you coming in. I know you're a very busy individual, so I appreciate you taking the time and coming in and share the story. Love the work you're doing at Hera Hub, and I have faith in you that you're going to build this movement that we're talking about, this female-focused leadership. We need that. I think that's part of the equation as well as bringing the feminine into this leadership role. I think that's been lacking a bit. So thank you.
Thank you, Joe.
Well, that's our show for today, and if you enjoyed it, please subscribe, comment, and most importantly, share the podcast with a friend. Again, special thanks to our collaborative community of San Diego business organizations, the Better Business Bureau, Conscious Capitalism, Be Local, Business for Good, and Cause San Diego. We're all using the influence of business to positively impact our very own community of San Diego. I'm Jeff Blanton from Jailbreak Leadership saying, until next time, go do what you do. Go do what you do best, for we're all counting on you.